Now, on Monday, 46 migrants were found dead in and around a semi-truck in San Antonio, Texas. As of yesterday, the death toll was 53. It's not the first time something like this has happened. There were similar tragedies in 2003 and 2017. Migrants coming into the U.S. from Mexico and Central America face serious danger. They're vulnerable to coercion and often targeted by criminals. The journey from Central America through Mexico to the United States carries risks of extortion, physical and sexual assault, and human trafficking. The Mexican National Human Rights Commission estimates that gangs make about $50 million from migrant kidnappings each year. We're talking now about the risks Central American migrants in particular face when they travel to the U.S. amid a record number of migrants being apprehended at the border. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen to address the humanitarian problems at the U.S.-Mexico border? What do you think the role of the U.S. government should be? Do you think there need to be changes in immigration law and immigration enforcement? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah McKinnon is a professor of communication arts at UW-Madison with expertise in U.S.-Mexico foreign policy and refugee and immigration issues. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
What do we know so far about what happened in this tragedy with these migrants going through San Antonio?
Well, what you reported about this specific incident, I think, is exactly right. What we also know is that that journey did not begin at the U.S.-Mexico border. This was a journey that probably began for most in Guatemala and traveled through the route of Mexico to make it to the United States. And the conditions that we learned about in San Antonio are probably much like the conditions that they experienced throughout their journey in Mexico. Most migrants arriving in the United States today through the U.S.'s southern border are making these trips in cargo vans. It's the most popular route, and that means a journey through cargo vans throughout the route of Mexico.
This is a dangerous journey, no question about it. Let's start at the origin. What is going on in especially three Central American countries that's driving people to take this very risky trip?
Yeah, in particular, we have to look at Honduras and Guatemala. And these are contexts that are, there's some similarities. There's definitely high, really significant rates of violence in both countries. Honduras right now ranks as the world's most dangerous place, the most number of homicides per 100,000 people. In addition to violence that's related to criminal organizations, climate is also a really significant issue. There have been important and really significant climate disasters in the last few years that have impacted significantly people's lives and have made the economic stability, the ability to feed yourself and your family just much more challenging. And along with this, we can also say that the pandemic has not helped economic situation. I think it's really significant to note that prior to the pandemic, the apprehensions at the U.S.-Mexico border had been going down. There were about 300,000 in total for that year. And then in 2021 and 2022, we're seeing record numbers. And so we also have to think about the ways in which the pandemic and global economic stability, how these economic channels that are all integrated really impact people's ability to survive and live in their home countries.
Now, here in the debate in the U.S., some have pointed toward stronger policies or at least stronger talk from the Trump administration, maybe dissuading people to try to make that that crossing and pointing toward the change of administration as being an invitation to more people to try to make that journey and come across the border. What do you think of that argument?
I don't really think that bears out necessarily. I think we have to really look at the root causes of migration, and the root causes in these instances are issues of heightened violence, instances of instability, generalized instability in people's lives that just make it impossible to keep on living where one is living. we can certainly look at the Trump administration and some of the policies that were implemented. But when we think about the policy lifespan of this, it's a much longer conversation. In fact, we might think about going back to 1994 as a key year in the way in which U.S. shifted immigration policy to really focus on what's described as prevention through deterrence. So implementing policies that knowingly will make immigration harder, so making it have to happen through really dangerous territory or dangerous modes like cargo vans, but literally quite making it impossible to arrive so one might apply for asylum, just literally preventing individuals' abilities to claim their human rights.
Talking to Sarah McKinnon from UW-Madison, looking at the U.S.-Mexico border, the dangerous journey from Central American countries through Mexico, then across the U.S. border after this recent tragedy in Texas. You can join in with your thoughts, your solutions, if you have ideas or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sarah, a couple of policies that are in operation now. This Title 42 started in the Trump administration during the pandemic, still going on, as I understand it, that makes it easier for the U.S. government to send would-be migrants back. But also the Remain in Mexico policy, the U.S. Supreme Court gave the go-ahead to the Biden administration to not use that anymore. That ruling just came down today. What to you stands out as the key current factors in our immigration, our enforcement policy at the border?
Yeah, so these two policies were really, in many ways, relying on Mexico as a neighboring country to do the prevention work, to make it impossible for individuals who may have valid claims to asylum to apply for asylum. So Title 42 gave the Border Patrol officials the right to expel migrants from the United States to neighboring countries. And there were agreements. So this involved agreements with other countries to allow for that to happen. That certainly has increased the number of these figures that we're seeing in 2021 and 2022, because it means that more people are repeating. So they're trying to cross again in the hopes that they might make it and not be caught. So that's a part of the inflation here. The Remain in Mexico policy effectively did something really similar. It said you can apply for asylum, but you have to wait literally in Mexico, you have to wait to go through this hearing. And both of these policies were really in violation of doctrine that the United States has signed in relation to refugee protocol, most specifically in relation to the 1967 non-refoulement policy. This policy was implemented so that asylum seekers from all over the world might arrive at or within the U.S. border and really have the ability to make their claim, so to claim asylum and have it be evaluated thoroughly. And so both of these policies made that impossible because asylum seekers could not arrive at or within the borders of the United States to do that work. And so we see just today the Supreme Court saying, yes, Biden, you may go along and get rid of the Remain in Mexico policy. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks regarding that. I don't exactly know what that ruling then means for the Title 42 policy. We will see. But effectively, this has meant a prevention tactic for folks who might be able to acclaim asylum.
It's Brianna Caller at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I was just saying that the immigration problem, of course, has been around a long time, and we have a whole lot of ill will and kind of lack of trust, and therefore we're not able to move rational, changes to the policies ahead. And to me, it seems one of the main reasons is we spend a lot of time discussing the rights of the illegals, and we don't discuss the right of those people who choose to come in the country illegally or even are already living here legally. And so the question of rights and grievances is out of balance, that we constantly talk about only the illegals' rights, and people who are here already and people who are immigrating or have immigrated legally really don't feel that they're being rewarded for playing by the rules. And there's no reason to follow the rules, unfortunately, it seems.
John, thanks a lot for the call. An issue of fairness, I think a lot of people would agree with John, for the people who got in line, I guess, and came in legally, Sarah.
Yeah, and what I would say about that is through the prevention through deterrence policies that really began in 1994, one of the things that was implemented was just to make legal channels harder and harder and less available. So even restricting the ways in which one might legally, you know, gain a visa and apply for asylum, things like family reunification, asylum, these are programs that have been in existence for decades. And in 1994, we really start to see a restriction of who is eligible and a heightening of the tasks, the challenges that it takes to go through those processes. And the other thing I wanted to say in relation to the caller is, I'm a communication scholar, so I think about the ways in which we frame immigration. And I think you're right, like so often immigration is framed as a problem. And, you know, one of the ways we might shift that is to say maybe migration is something that naturally happens. It's a human right, and it's a natural fact of humanity, movement around the world.
Thanks for the call, John. We're talking to Sarah McKinnon, professor at UW-Madison with expertise in U.S.-Mexico foreign policy and refugee and immigration issues, talking with us about the dangers that Central American migrants face when they take the journey to the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. There is, as we heard, a pandemic-era rule that allows the U.S. to expel migrants from the U.S. That is still in effect. What do you think of that? Should that change now? Are there changes you'd like to see to U.S. immigration policy? Should it be easier to make legal claims of asylum? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with UW-Madison immigration and refugee expert Sarah McKinnon, looking at the dangers that Central American migrants face in coming to Mexico and then to the U.S. after this tragic death, dozens of people in Texas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Alice is with us in Green Bay. Alice, hi.
Hi. I guess I just wanted to bring up, I don't understand, maybe it's just me, but why are we concerned about people moving from other countries to here? I don't see the problem with that. We move to other countries, so what if they move here?
Alice, thanks a lot for the call. There's been a lot of concern about the issue of immigration. Sarah, what would you say to Alice?
Alice, that's a really good question. And it's since the foundation of U.S. laws, this has been a question that's been, you know, wrapped around. I mean, there's so many arguments that are made about framing this as a problem. Many go to an economic argument, although when we look at the statistics, that really just doesn't bear out in many ways. Many talk about the problem or the fear of changing the demographics of the U.S. citizenry. And so that's another dynamic that comes into play. But I think your question is right on. Why is this a problem? Why is this framed as a problem when it's something that people from all over the world move, right? And so why are we thinking about this as a problem?
Alice, thanks for the call. Tim joins us now in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to say they need to make it easier. I've got a wife I'm trying to get over here from England, and you know, it's a 12-step thing you have to go through, and I'm in 1B of 12 steps, and it's been over a year and a lot of money, and she's college educated and provides a service that we need here, and you know, it's ridiculous. It is, I'm to say, quite ridiculous.
Tim, thanks for sharing your experience. Good luck. Sarah, I think people may think it's easier to legally immigrate to the United States than it actually is.
Yeah, Tim's right on. I mean, even when you go through the step-by-step following all of the rules, we're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars. We're talking about a system that really necessitates that you hire a lawyer because it's a very complicated system and most of us are not experts in this legal language. And if you do one little thing wrong, that you know, you're told go back to the beginning and start again. And it's many, many years. Even the most simple cases, like what it sounds like what Tim is describing, family reunification, right? This is a system and a process that takes many years, at least 2 or 3 years. And even when one arrives in the United States on something like a fiancé visa or a visa through through marriage outside of the United States, you're still waiting for your permanent residency card. You're still waiting for your social security number. And so the steps just keep on going. It is not an easy system. And it leaves many people in a state of limbo that then sometimes means one is forced to kind of colloquially what we would say is go into the shadows, do things that might jeopardize one's immigration status.
And I know a lot of my family came over from Ireland and Poland with lots of other people. And as I understand it, there's a long stretch where basically if you didn't have visible sores and said no, if they asked if you were a prostitute, you were in. It used to be a lot easier. Is that about right?
That's right. That's absolutely right. The processes have changed. Really, when we begin to look at immigration regulation, it begins in the United States in the late 1800s. And the first communities that were excluded, were targeted for immigration restriction, were individuals coming from Asia, and specifically women, because the myth, the thought was that Asian women were going to be prostitutes and change the morality of the United States. And so the U.S. Page Laws, I think, are really significant to look at, to think about what does that mean for our fears about what immigration does to the United States and to the citizenry.
Now, bringing things back to our starting point today, this tragedy in Texas, not the only tragedy that'll happen this year, I'm sure. If there were, are there changes you could see being made to make life safer for people trying to make this journey so we don't have mass deaths like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think step one is to take some of these deterrence policies backwards a few steps and to actually allow people to apply for asylum, to take the 1980 Refugee Act on its face value and to implement some of those procedures to allow people to apply for asylum. So many of the individuals that we are speaking about today who tragically died in this instance, but so many other instances, they are really trying to come to the United States to apply for asylum, which means they've already experienced a lifetime of persecution. And that's not a decision that you make just, you know, off the top of your head. It's a decision that you make because you need to survive. And so that's one. The other thing, this is a long-term thing, but investment in economic development in these countries can go a long way. So often what we're talking about here is a crisis of instability, a food crisis. And so, you know, in this system of this global economy that we live in, these economic systems are integrated. And so that would be another thing. That is something that's happening through aid. There are definitely collaborations between the United States and the Northern Triangle countries of Central America to implement some of these policies, but it takes a long time. So that's something as well. And the other thing is to think about the climate crisis and to think about what that will mean for the international refugee system. We are going to increasingly see instances of individuals across the globe whose homes are swept out, right, from under their feet, swept out from under from the earth itself. And so to really look at the international system and say, what are we going to do with climate refugees as they increasingly become a part of the displaced persons around the world system?
And briefly, I think this would be diplomatically tricky. I've heard people suggest trying to make it possible or easier to apply for asylum from one's home country. So you can start the process without undertaking this very hazardous journey across Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting proposal. I think that's perhaps where we need to be really looking to think about, okay, what are some creative solutions to this globalized system that we live in, and that might indeed be the case. And toward one of the caller's points, towards Tim's point, looking at the methods of migration that we have, of immigration that we have, and thinking not about how to make them harder, but how to make them easier to navigate so that individuals can use these processes, these methods that are available.
Briefly, just in our last half a minute or so, one of our callers referenced the divide in the U.S. over immigration policy. Are you hopeful that people can come together on something that's going to help the situation?
I mean, I believe I always have to remain hopeful, and I'll continue to remain hopeful about that. It is a long-term process that we are in to come to some solutions that might make people's lives more livable.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sarah McKinnon is a professor of communication arts at UW-Madison with expertise in U.S.-Mexico foreign policy and refugee and immigration issues. She talked to us today about the dangerous journey many Central Americans undertake in their attempts to come to the U.S. and how different elements of U.S. immigration and border policy affect them.